Hey, this is David Poe, and you're listening to 90.7 FM WGXC Accra.
You can find out about so many local events, like the traditional Irish music session. Every Sunday, there's an open Irish music jam at the Shamrock House in East Durham from 2 to 5 p.m. Find out more on the WGXC community calendar online at WGXC.org and add your own event to the WGXC community calendar and have it read on the radio at 90.7 FM by going to WGXC.org and clicking on the community calendar.
Do you have 17 cents a day to support a platform for many diverse voices to have their say on the local airwaves? Just 17 cents a day, a monthly $5 recurring donation, can help keep local youth on the air at WGXC 90.7 FM. Your monthly sustaining support will keep the airwaves full of music from around the world and around the corner. WGXC needs 500 sustaining supporters to make sure there is one spot on the dial where the community can have access to its own airwaves. Make your pledge today at WGXC.org/donate and do your part to protect an important source of local news, information, and entertainment. With just 17 cents a day, you will do your part to protect your favorite frequency. Become a sustaining supporter today. Go to WGXC.org/donate now.
Wavefarms WGXC is made possible in part by the generous support of Joanne Williams in Inwood, New York. WGXC monthly supporters care deeply about Creative Community Radio. Their generosity and investment keep this unique station viable. You too can become a monthly supporter by going to WGXC.org/donate and establishing a donation at the amount of your choosing. We hope you will do so. Thank you so much for your support.
The Public News Service Daily Newscast, May the 17th, 2024. I'm Mike Clifford. Daniel Perry, a former U.S. Army sergeant who was convicted of murdering a protester at a Black Lives Matter rally in 2020, was released from prison Thursday after he was pardoned by Texas Governor Greg Abbott. That from CNN. They report Abbott's decision comes after the Texas Board of Pardons and Paroles voted unanimously Thursday to recommend a full pardon and restoration of firearms rights for Perry, who was sentenced last year to 25 years in prison. And this week, Ohio approved adult-use marijuana sales as part of a 2023 ballot measure, with sales anticipated to start in mid-June.
Ohioans age 21 and over can now legally purchase marijuana across the state. In December, a law was enacted allowing people to grow and possess marijuana, but with no legal avenues to purchase it. Governor Mike DeWine and some Republicans sought swift action to prevent black market sales. Jim Canapa oversees the Division of Cannabis Control in the Ohio Department of Commerce. He says after years of experience in liquor control, his role is to fairly and responsibly permit folks who grow, possess, sell, and test cannabis.
My focus right now is really on coming up with the rules that are required and set forth and the timeline set forth in the initiated statute. They're June 7th to have the applications ready and September 7th to start issuing permits.
The Joint Committee on Agency Rule Review approved the rules without objection, enabling a dual licensing program for existing medical marijuana dispensaries to also sell non-medical cannabis products. Farah Siddiqui reporting.
The new legislation allows for people aged 21 and older to buy and possess up to 2.5 ounces of cannabis or 15 grams of cannabis extract. It also allows for the home cultivation of up to 6 plants for personal use. And workforce watchers project the country could face critical worker shortages in many of these skilled trades in the coming years. The Nebraska Winnebago tribe is taking a proactive approach to the issue, as Deborah Van Vliet explains.
Its apprenticeship program helps high school juniors and seniors learn skills while helping the community build its skilled workforce. It's a collaboration between Ho-Chunk Inc., Winnebago High School, the Winnebago Tribe Education Department, and local businesses. Willie Bass with Ho-Chunk Inc. says tribal leaders realized they needed programs for their youth who might not pursue higher education.
This program was intended to get students interested in a foot in the door in the fields of construction, IT, nursing, education, etc., any of those sort of technical related careers.
Bass explains the students earn credits for spending 2 hours at their work site 4 days a week.
Winnebago's population has increased 30% in the past 8 years. This is Public News Service. Next to Virginia, where a new rule from the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission could improve the state's electric grid transmission capacity. It requires utilities and grid operators to plan 20 years ahead to accommodate expected changes in energy production.
The rule is designed to help Virginia meet the high energy demands of the growing data center market and prevent service disruptions in extreme weather. Nick Guidi with the Southern Environmental Law Center says this rule will help the state reach its climate goals.
For the first time, really, in a lot of these states, the transmission planning process will have to explicitly take into account state goals and corporate clean energy goals. That hasn't really happened before.
He adds the current process holds back state activity. The rule faces sharp criticism from FERC Commissioner Mark Christie. He characterizes it as a way to enact policies never passed by Congress and calls it a blatant violation of the major questions doctrine. Guidi thinks this could lead to legal challenges. I'm Edwin J. Vieira.
And surrounded by states that ban nearly all abortions, its legalization in New Mexico has made the state a top place to travel for the procedure.
Results from a coalition of civil rights groups finds that women of color say politicians who want to earn their vote need to focus on reproductive justice, plus the issues of affordable health care, gun violence prevention, and racism. Lupe Rodriguez leads the National Latina Institute for Reproductive Justice.
With Latinas and other women of color, we've seen their power as a voting bloc on this issue in recent elections. And voters of color, and including Latinos, are rejecting abortion bans and attacks on their freedom.
The poll found nearly 9 in 10 women of color say voting in the 2024 election is extremely or very important. I'm Roz Brown.
Over a 15-month period ending in June 2023, the Institute found the number of abortions in New Mexico increased by 220%, with many patients coming from Texas, where it's mostly banned. And finally, more than 1 million people in North Carolina are diabetic. They have become increasingly worried about the national shortage of insulin. Jessica Lynn Latto of Charlotte was diagnosed with type 1 diabetes at the age of 28 during pregnancy. She has seen firsthand the challenges the insulin shortage created.
We typically are prescribed 10 milliliter vials. Some people were being prescribed three milliliter vials. Other people were being prescribed insulin pens, or altogether having the type of insulin they use changed to a different brand.
Advocates emphasize the urgent need for transparency about the causes of the current insulin shortage. This is Mike Clifford, and thank you for wrapping up your week with Public News Service, member and listener supported. Hear us on great radio stations, your favorite podcast platform. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
Hello, and welcome to the better weather for Friday, May 17th. Local early morning temperatures range from 44 degrees in Medusa to 53 in Skodak. Regional average soil temperature is 58 degrees. Pollen levels for today will be high. Some people could run into fog this morning that should burn off by 9 a.m. Rest of the day will be mostly cloudy, but conditions will be comfortable. We get a high of 76 at 4 p.m. Overnight temperatures fall to 55 degrees. Tomorrow will be mostly dry with a high of 65 at 4 p.m. Rain chances will roll through between 2 and 7 p.m. 55 degrees overnight takes us into a dry and warm Sunday with a high of 78. Monday also dry with a high of 80. Today's tide schedule is low tide at 5:43 a.m., high tide at 11:19 a.m., and low tide once again at 6:11 p.m. Today's river temperature will be 63 degrees and the tide strength will be low. Sunset today will be at 7:56 p.m. Sunrise tomorrow will be at 5:28 a.m. Looking way up, we see X-class flare chances are down to 10%. Plasma winds will be slow at 382 kilometers per second with a thin density of 3 protons per cubic centimeter. Radio propagation conditions are currently terrible till dark, then fair below 8 megahertz overnight. There are low chances for aurora this evening. The current sunspot number is 208. And this has been The Better Weather, brought to you by the Catskill Makers Syndicate.
German measles, Russian flu, Montezuma's revenge. And why do we say a foreign word whenever someone sneezes? Tomorrow, I'll take a look at swine flu, up close and personal. This is Les Nesbitt.
We are now joined by Ben Sarraton from Basilica Hudson to talk about the 24-hour drone. Are you officially from Basilica Hudson, or are you?
Yeah, I'm the director of programs at Basilica Hudson, and it's my deep pleasure and honor to be here.
Well, thank you so much for being here,
of course,
too.
Of course.
Every year, how many years has it been now that there have been 24-hour drones?
Well, see, that's a good question. It is technically the 10th anniversary of some version of a 24-hour drone concert happening. I believe it's the 7th IRL installment of it at Basilica Hudson, if I'm remembering my drone history correctly.
There were a couple of COVID years where it was internet only or
yes,
web
Yes, there was a drone only. At home, which were really fascinating articles of a very particular time in global cultural history.
It was a strange time. But now we're back to pretty much normality, right?
Yeah. I mean, as normal as an event like 24-hour drone can really be, I suppose.
Did it? Has it rained on the new roof yet? Does the new roof sound interesting when it rains?
The new roof is beautiful.
I haven't noticed that yet.
There's a lot less rust than there used to be, which is
It was kind of charming
detriment.
Too.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, but it's newly insulated. There's like green insulated foam in there, and it sounds good. I have heard the rain. It's really evocative, actually. I think if we get a nice little sprinkle this weekend, it's going
to
be...
Is it supposed to rain this weekend? I haven't checked the weather.
Yeah, we might get a few sprinkles here and there, but I think there might be some magic.
Yeah, the northern lights aren't back. That would have been...
Yeah, we should have coincided with that for sure.
Why didn't you work that out with the sun?
Yeah, that's my bad.
Okay, so you've got another amazing 24-hour drone lineup. Explain to, I guess there might be people listening that don't know what 24-hour drone is. I'm sure a lot of people have either been there or heard it or heard about it by now, but there's probably some that haven't.
Yeah, I mean, if you've been in the area for long enough, I feel like you've probably heard of these events. But just to sum it up for those of you who might have not have had the pleasure previously, it's really just what it sounds like. It's a 24-hour long continuous concert where the music and the held tones never cease. There's no break in the music. We're going to have, I think, 25 or 26 performers this year. And as one set ends, another begins. It's kind of a relay baton pass kind of situation where one sound blends into another and they keep the drone going. And people come. Some people stay the entire time, which is really quite a feat. People sleep. There's all sorts of things that happen. But, yeah, when we say it's a 24-hour drone, that's literally what it is. One big, long, communal art effort that lasts 24 straight hours from noon to noon.
And is it like Live Aid where you've got a rotating stage where every 20 minutes it's a different...
Oh, yeah. Our stage is really high tech. It's just some drop cloth and some carpet padding on some concrete.
People attending maybe should think about bringing certain items, right?
Yeah,
because
of
what you're talking about there. There's not... rugs everywhere, right?
No, it's more of a industrial sleepover. Yeah, we encourage people to bring a camping pad or a sleeping bag or a pillow or things of that nature. Not too much because it's a big room, but everybody's laying down, so our capacity for holding people is diminished. We want to make sure that people are considerate of their neighbors, but yeah, it's not, instead of comfortable shoes, you might want to think about bringing a blanket.
And I guess it's one of those things, like, what percentage of people do you think stay up the entire time that attend the event compared to what percentage sleep at some point?
Well, it's really interesting. I think, the demographics have certainly shifted in the 10 years since this event has been happening. I first attended in 2018 before I was working for Basilica. And I think there it was, like, back then it was maybe more folks in their 20s and 30s, maybe, like... rave and electronic music adjacent people. It's nothing for somebody who goes to raves regularly to dance for 18 hours straight. So but now we start to see like people bring their kids. We have a Sunday morning ticket where you can come in for $20 instead of the full price. And so yeah, families come through, and we've made a concerted effort to also include elders in our programming. So legendary performance artist, and kind of, it's amazing that she lives around here. Linda Mary Montana will be appearing as Mother Teresa at 7 a.m. on Sunday.
So you've got a religious experience for Sunday morning.
Yes. I think it might be a transcendent experience for some and perhaps a triggering experience for any lapsed Catholics.
I wanted to start with the final performance. Did I hear someone is staying up the whole time bartending and then ending the night yes. with a ending the day because it'll be noon.
Their set starts at 11:30. This is JP, who some of you may know from bartending at Catskill. He has an amazing noise project called Faccia Bruta, which I believe means ugly face, or like brutalized face. And he makes all sorts of racket using radiators and chains and amplified electronics of various kinds. And he's a regular bartender at Basilica. And we've been trying to find a way to incorporate him into a performance for a long time. And as Sarah Van Buren and I were putting this festival together, we knew that JP probably wanted to bartend, and we knew that he would probably be down to perform. And his music is so cathartic and visceral. And, you know, it sounds like throwing a car into a junkyard at times. And we thought it would be really good for a moment of catharsis. It feels like right now maybe people would benefit from a big communal group scream. And we think JP is going to facilitate that for us. And he wants to use the cans and bottles from working the bar for 24 hours as part of the sound source for his set.
Oh, right. That's what I forgot. Yes. That was the part I forgot. Yes, that was someone did tell me that. Yes,
so a truly genius
idea. As you drink throughout the performance, you'll be incorporated into the final performance.
Absolutely, yes. So, you know, maybe low-key an incentive to buy more drinks at the bar.
To have a bigger part of the final orchestra.
Yes. But, I mean, for those of you who attended last year's festival, you know, we ended on this heart chant that was a piece composed by Pauline Oliveros, the deep listening instructor that's so crucial to this region. And that piece is very uplifting. It kind of it literally makes people touch each other's hearts and you get synced up, and it was a really moving experience. I was so tired at the end of it. I really hold that moment dear in my heart, and we felt that JP could kind of offer the inverse of that, something that was like about letting it out and getting the bad energy expelled from your body. So I think it's gonna be great.
So to tell us about what are some of the performances you're most looking forward to?
Oh man, there are so many good ones. I'm really pleased that people were so excited to play. I think one of the sets I'm most looking forward to is going to be the most challenging for people to see, which is the 4 a.m slot. That's going to feature a duo called Mirrored Fatality. You ever heard Mirrored Fatality before?
I have not, no.
Oh, I wish. I don't have their website pulled up in front of me. They have one of the best websites I have ever seen. You could stop right there. And their bio is amazing. They are true artists. They have this kind of post-apocalyptic, rave, farmer, kind of Mad Max aesthetic where they have extremely cool-looking clothes and really intricate eyeliner, and they're wearing a lot of, like, buckles and chains. And their music is noisy but propulsive and sounds kind of like worms eating soil, and they work as farmers, and they're very militant queers, and they're just like the coolest people, and they're so nice also, which is great. And I think their set at 4 a.m. is going to be truly remarkable. And I know it involves a vacuum cleaner and possibly a blender, so that's one to look forward to.
I think I found a YouTube video of a live performance that they seem to be in between. Again, in between.
It's going to be hard to capture their entire performance. They definitely do a theatrical
presentation. Yeah, I'm seeing. Yeah, you guys are all missing. Everybody's missing everything besides me right now, yeah. Who else do you want to talk about?
Let's see here. We also have a set from Tyondai Braxton. He's going to be performing with another area synthesist, Ben Vida. And I just think Tyondai's music is incredible. It's so intricate and multi-layered and kind of psychotic sounding. And I've been following his career for so long. I was listening to his guitar and voice recordings like 20 years ago. before he was in the band Battles. And I actually do have a Tyondai track if we can go ahead and play that one if you want.
Bring it right now.
Yeah, let's hear that one.
Oh, I got to turn the... now it should be coming up. Do we hear it? There it is. What is this called?
This is called Multiplay.
And what time is this going to be on?
This is at midnight sharp. And this is just Tyondai Braxton, but he'll be performing with Ben Vida as well.
And Ben is from Kingston?
Yeah, he's a local guy. Local modular synthesis guy.
Yeah, there's a mixture of people that are Hudson Valley oriented and a mixture of international folks too.
Yeah, there's all types of people performing. It's a pretty wide-ranging group.
Realized I had the outside mic on. I couldn't tell what the real birds from the musical birds.
Yeah, I was having the same experience. And, you know, speaking of birds, that's actually a really crucial component of the concert experience, is that at dawn, there's these birds that seem to get into the rafters at Basilica, and they really take a extended solo from the hours of 5 to 8 a.m.
Yes. Each May, in the first Saturday of the month, we broadcast the dawn chorus from around the world. This show called Reveille from... It goes from London all the way around the world back to London from midnight to midnight. But it's all about the listening to the birds in all these different places and how wonderful they sound every morning. People don't often aren't awake that early. Mm-hmm.
I caught that broadcast this year. Not the whole thing, obviously, but it was amazing to drive around and listen to, you know, air from Indonesia.
And it's nice that it 2 weeks later it always blends into 24-hour drone, which has a similar you can get lost in it in a whole different way, and it varies a lot more than the Reveille, which is
of course
sometimes it's in the ocean, so it sounds a lot different than when it's around birds, but mostly it sounds like birds. But 24-hour drone can be sort of, I mean, you've got several vocal sort of mostly when you think of drones, you don't think of vocalists as much, except maybe, right. I guess, some like throat singers or something.
Throat singers, yeah. I mean, our definition of drone is pretty broad. And we really want to include kind of historical interpretations of that word as well. Because if you look at something like, you know, the tambura in Indian Carnatic music that's like 6,000 years old.
The whirling dervish in Turkey, is that kind of a drone sort of situation?
You know, I think one could argue that. I would love, personally, maybe we could book a whirling dervish next year. That would be pretty, that would be pretty rad, actually, come to think of it. Yeah, we really have all different types. There's a couple of really great vocalists who are performing this year. Maybe this is a good time to play some work by Nada El Shazly.
I've got into it's her record last year, I think it came out, and she's played a couple like regionally around here, but hasn't been in Hudson or Kingston, I don't think, because I haven't gone to see her.
I think she may have played the Tubby's 5-year anniversary party.
Oh, right. Yeah. Yes, she did, and I heard it was really amazing. Yes. Everybody said it was really great. That's
right. She's great. Yes, her voice is amazing. She has this kind of like, Egyptian classical music approach, but also her stuff is really kind of electronic and glitchy. And one of the cool things about this festival is that we get to encourage people to do a different type of set than they would do otherwise. The limitations of the space and the fact that people are falling asleep and the fact that you have to start your set while somebody else is playing, and we want this drone to be continuous, it pushes these artists into directions they wouldn't normally go. And it's a really amazing opportunity to see people do something that, you know, they may never do again. But I do have a recording of Nada. Maybe we want to play that one right now.
What time is she playing?
She's at, I think, 10 p.m., but I have to check. Hold on. I can tell you in a second.
Well, let's start the song, and then we'll chime in in a second. Yeah,
right, here we go. Yeah. I should mention that Nadas Set is part of a block that's curated by a booking agency called Heavy Trip from Montreal, who are kind of the like experimental music booking agency A+ premium. And there's a couple of other orgs that are presenting curated blocks this year. So we got Heavy Trip, they have the Nada and the Alex Yang Hung Tai set. The label RVNG or Revenge are presenting a couple of things. A Space for Sound and Black Decelerant, who just announced a new record and are very cool. And then we have a techno festival and kind of year-round party promoter called Dripping that do this festival in southern New Jersey that's kind of like half experimental classical music, half techno with like workshops. It's a very kind of cool multimodal techno festival that they run. And then there's one other one. Oh, yes, Le Guess who have been the long-term like co-curators of 24-Hour Drone. They're presenting a set by Dragon Child.
All right, what else do you want to tell people? And if people have just tuned in, we're talking with Ben Sarriton from Basilica Hudson about the 24-Hour Drone, which is Saturday, May 18th.
This coming Saturday, yes.
Noon through noon, Sunday, May 19th.
Correct, yes.
And where can people get tickets?
You can go to basilicahudson.org.
And I guess you can find out much more information, too.
Yes, there. We've got the whole run of everything that's happening up on the website. We'll have tickets available at the door as well if you want to just show up and drone with us. Maybe I'll take a moment to talk about some stuff that isn't music that's happening at this festival.
That
There's
sounds
some
great.
Really cool
yeah.
stuff. So we always try to feature at least one visual or video artist to kind of like enliven the space and give you something to look at if you've been there for 17 hours. and this year we have some newly fabricated sculptures by a local artist named Grace Lee Lawrence. And she has made this, it's getting installed like as we speak. She's made this enormous kind of like lumpy disco ball that's made out of hands and legs and kind of amorphous human forms, and all of the appendages are holding these refractive crystals that'll catch the light as the lumpy disco ball kind of spins over the over the performers. It's all like 3D printed bioplastic stuff. It's really, really wild, and I think people are going to really enjoy how that looks. She's also going to kind of adorn a bunch of the windows with more of the hands, and they'll be like coming out of the glass and holding these crystals. I think it's going to look really great. And then we also have, there's going to be hand-poked tattoos available on an ongoing basis in the bar. A local artist named Alex Patrick Dyke, a.k.a. Yoko Snoopy, does these tattoo spells that have essences and intention kind of infused into them. And they'll be doing hand-poked tattoos. It depends on how many people need them and how much energy they have to get the work done. But you can get a tattoo at Drone. I'll say this, I myself have a tattoo from Drone 2019 on my left arm, so you can get one too.
Is it relaxing to listen to a drone while you're getting a tattoo?
Yeah, as I recall it, the year I got my tattoo, it was during the Bagpipe Choir, and it was a really,
I remember the Bagpipe Choir.
Yes,
it was
like all of my senses were kind of like turned up to 11, you know? So yeah, you can get a tattoo. There's going to be sculptures. We did a special kind of collaborative, sunrise sauna sesh with Big Towel Spa, who are a mobile sauna that operate in Hudson. They used to be on Oakdale Beach, and now they're doing a short little kind of like pop-up operation.
Isn't this their last weekend at the waterfront park?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and they're opening the saunas at 5:30 a.m. So people who want to leave the concert and go schwitz for a minute will be able to do so.
And we should get some radios in there.
We're gonna bring over. I have a boombox specifically for this application. We're gonna make sure that if you're in the sauna, you can still hear, the vocal nori gong set that's happening at 5 a.m.
Spread a couple on the way. You can get a whole a Peter Pan
radio
path.
Walk. Ooh, yeah, that's a good idea. Yeah, we might have to do that.
Draw the rats to the. Where did Peter Pan take the rats? Out of the town, I guess.
Yeah.
Or not Peter Pan.
The
who
Pied Piper.
Pied Piper took the rats out of town. I'm mixing up all kinds of myths and legends and lies, I think. What is the, most important to a lot of people, what is the food and drink situation?
Oh, yes, absolutely. Yeah, it's pretty banging, if I do say so myself. Our regular kind of hot food vendor is Local 111, who...
out in Philmont?
They have a restaurant in Philmont, but Joe, who is the genius chef behind that place, makes amazing food. And, you know, Basilica has a little commercial kitchen, but it's kind of like, it's more like a pop-up size kitchen or like a food truck style kitchen. And what she puts out from that kitchen is really remarkable. So they're going to be doing lunch Saturday, dinner Saturday, and then brunch Sunday. And then we also have food provided by, I hit the thunder stick. We have food provided by Woodland Pantry, who operate out of Kingston. And they do, like, really delicious, nourishing crudité. They're going to have, like, a mushroom broth. It's more like super organic, super healthy snacks. We'll have those at the bar. There's going to be a soft serve machine at the Local 111 stand. They're going to make mochi donuts on Sunday. If you come hungry to 24-Hour Joan, you will have a good time.
There's a lot of choices there that you just listed.
And crucially, we will have a fancy coffee vendor on Saturday this year in addition to Sunday morning.
Is there other new things or different things this year at 24-Hour Drone?
Well, we do have those curated blocks. That's kind of an interesting approach. We wanted to make sure that we didn't just, you know, I helped a little bit with the curation and the organizing. Sarah Van Buren has been doing the bulk of the curation for a long time. We didn't want to have just our perspectives on this big festival. We wanted to make sure that we had a lot of different people and a lot of different ideas about what Drone and what this performance could be. So we do have those curated blocks, and we also brought back the popular open call. We put the call out to whoever wanted to send us their sounds to, you know, we listened to everything. There were like, I don't know, 150 submissions or something along those lines, and we very diligently listened to everything. And there's a number of performers we found from the open call who we're really excited about. So, yeah, there's a lot of tradition. Things are kind of baked in at this point because it's a ritualistic, almost kind of like quasi-religious experience for people who come regularly to this performance. So, you know, we always put the stage in the middle. We lay out the floor in a certain way. We light it a certain way to make it feel familiar. But there are always these things that we're tweaking and trying to make it as good as we can.
And it's different every time because the performers are different or in a different order. You know, someone doing a set at midnight is going to do a much different set than someone doing a set at 6 or 7 a.m. Right?
Absolutely. And, you know, the Basilica building has been undergoing, we talked about the roof earlier. There's been a ton of work done on the building in the last 2 years, tons of green modifications and retrofittings. It's like yourself, solar powered. We've got new heated floors, a new concrete floor, new insulation. The back gallery is getting renovated. All this stuff is happening, which is great, but it's caused us to push Drone into May the last 2 years. It historically happened in April. And the really interesting thing is that if you push Drone into May, then suddenly you have the days are a lot longer. So it doesn't get dark now until like 8:40 or so. So now there's a lot more light. And then when we go into the nighttime, it feels like the night is more intense and it's darker. But yeah, when you're in one room for 24 hours, you really pay attention to things like where the sun is.
And it comes up earlier, too, in the morning.
Exactly, yeah.
So those birds are chirping sooner.
Yeah, they're working overtime. Yeah, exactly.
And is there? Did I hear that the side building is going to be is getting changed a little bit?
Yeah, we have. If anyone has been to the Jupiter Night series the last couple of years, we do that in the gallery building in that front part. But there's a whole rest of the building that I can't really say too much about at the moment. But it is being worked on, and it should be done soon, and it will be hopefully a real boon to the arts community in the 518.
That sounds great.
Yeah.
We can always use more spaces for performances or for arts or for community folks to gather. And because you also do events like, what is the Thanksgiving?
The Farm and Flea.
You do lots of different community events, and you have rent out to weddings and all kinds of other things too.
Yeah, and it's like, you know, not every our main hall where Drone is happening holds over 1,000 people, and it's not like every event wants to be in a room that holds 1,000 people. Sometimes you need a more intimately scaled performance for the work to do what it needs to do. And sometimes, you know, people need to hold a meeting, and hopefully we can do that kind of community facilitation type stuff in the back room as well.
Yeah, it's like Donald Trump, you know, he used to play those like 10,000 arenas, and it felt right because it was all full, but now he can only get like 2,000 or 3,000, so he's got to play the theater.
He needs more intimacy.
It needs
yes.
to feel like it's full, you know.
Yeah.
So. You don't get compared to Donald Trump very often, do you?
Me, I love personally, that,
or
not
Basilica,
anymore.
I mean.
Yeah.
That always throws people off, yeah, if you make any comparison. What? But a 24-hour drone has, I'm sure, absolutely nothing to do with Donald Trump this year.
Trumpless.
Again, tell if they tuned in late, what is it quickly, and give it the details again.
Sure thing. Yeah, 24-hour drone is exactly what it sounds like. It's a 24-hour long performance that happens every year at Basilica Hudson. It's coming this Saturday at noon, and it will continue uninterrupted until Sunday at noon. Tickets are available now. You can go to basilicahudson.org for more info, and we will be taking walk-ups if you want to join us. And should we play another track, maybe?
We can go out on a track. Well, I'll say, too, if you're arriving late, you can tune in on your way to 90.7 FM, or if you have to leave early because you just can't make it, you can still tune in. Or if you go to the sauna in the morning, you can hear it over there on 90.7 FM, too.
Right on. Yeah, so this track I'm going to play for you, it's actually kind of interesting. It's like a combination of two of the bands that are playing. This vampire psych rock duo called White Hills are doing a special wordless drone set. They're playing at 1 a.m. And then in the wee morning hours, there's a band called Moundabout playing, who are kind of doing this like ancient Celtic Stonehenge, kind of going deep into the bog type folk music. And one of the members from that band is in a band called Nod, G-N-O-D. And Nod and White Hills have an album together called Nod Drop Out with White Hills. So this is like some heavy, heavy psych rock, and kind of a flavor of something you might expect in the wee hours at 24-hour drum this weekend.
All right. Thank you, Ben Sarriton, for joining us today.
Welcome to Nature Calls, Conversations from the Hudson Valley. Our conversation today is with David Chinnery, Rensselaer County's Cornell Cooperative Extension Horticultural Turf Management Senior Resource Educator. Wow, that's a mouthful. David is the go-to guy for many of the surrounding counties and is in demand as an instructor for the Master Gardener Volunteer Trainings. David, how long have you been involved in the Cooperative Extension? Maybe you can tell us a little bit about your history and also kind of your interest in turf management.
Well, thank you for having me here today. I go back to 1989 when I started working for Cornell Cooperative Extension in Westchester County. And at that time, I did all sorts of horticulture programs, and I wanted to move upstate. So the job in Rensselaer County came open in 1996. It was a turf grass position. It was regional. I didn't particularly like turf grass, but I said I want to move. And I came up here and I adapted and learned turf grass. So now I am a turf grass person, and I'm not really regional anymore, but I certainly help out the other cooperative extension counties and master gardener programs.
Could you define what you mean when you say turf grass? It's probably obvious, but you're using that kind of as a term. So what does it exactly mean?
Well, that's a good question too, because I remember giving one of my first lawn talks for an hour. I talked about turf grass and lawns, and then at the end of it, a lady in the front row raised her hand and said, "What is turf grass?" So it is good to define. What we mean by turf grass is anything that we mow and we walk on. That's how I look at it. So that includes lawns, sports fields, utility areas, golf courses, those types of areas where we're growing grasses and we're growing them short and we're using them for, you know, human activities for the most part.
So, David, no doubt you've seen significant changes in turf management practices over the years. And I know from attending a class, you've always taught respect for the environment in turf care. Could you tell us about some of the biggest changes you've seen?
Sure. You know, being around for 33 years, I'm getting to be the old timer. But there have been a lot of changes in that time. The first one I always think of is that we have a no phosphorus and lawn fertilizer law. That came about in 2012 in New York State, and that basically said we're not supposed to be putting phosphorus on lawns that are receiving fertilizer. With a few caveats, if you're starting a new lawn, you can still use a fertilizer, like a starter fertilizer that has phosphorus. Or if you have a soil test that says you need phosphorus, but that law hopefully is working to reduce phosphorus runoff into waterways, lakes, places like that. So that's a big one. Certainly, the grasses themselves have been changing. There are people called turf grass breeders, and they've been working to make grasses that grow slower, grasses that are better tolerant to drought, grasses that are more pest tolerant, grasses that need less fertilizer. So the industry, if I can call it that, and the research is really moving towards more sustainable lawns because the grasses themselves are changing. I think people are interested very much in low-mow lawns, no-mow lawns, lawn mowers that are not going to be as polluting. So that's a big change, and we're moving in that direction. I think we have more alternative, what I call alternative practices, rather than just going to the store and buying a bag of fertilizer and a bag of grub control and just putting it on sort of mindlessly. There's been a lot of work on trying to figure out how we can use less pesticides, how can we use products more effectively, things like overseeding, which I've been working on for a long time, reducing the amount of herbicide that people use. There's new management things for grubs coming along, which is great. So, you know, back in 1989, some people wanted that stuff and we just didn't have it. And now we have more alternatives like that. And the last one, which is really very new, is that we have genetically engineered grasses coming along. So that's going to be very interesting.
Can you talk a little bit about, you know, what you just mentioned in terms of chemical overuse? Because I know certainly when you drive by like golf courses and they're just so pristine, I always feel like they're pouring, you know, huge amounts of chemicals. And a lot of my neighbors, I think, put a lot of chemicals on their lawns. Talk a little bit about that and kind of what kind of education's out there and what the trends are and what people seem to be doing in terms of that.
Sure. Well, you know, the world is geared to marketing, right? People buy what they see, people buy what they know. There's a lot of money that is behind lawn care products. So, you know, something like a step program that tells people to, you know, put these things on in this order and you're going to have results. That is really attractive to people because it's sort of easy to do. It's in front of them. It's at the store. They don't have to think about it a lot. So, you know, we're asking them to step back, to think about your lawn, to understand what's going on in your lawn. And that takes a lot more work. So we're kind of up against that marketing and sort of ease factor. But I take hope in that people like Master Gardeners and certainly a lot of concerned people that, you know, have a lawn, but they don't want to make it something that is going to be detrimental to the environment. They want to be more environmentally friendly. They're the ones that are really looking for, you know, the information that is a little more involved. And certainly I want to say golf course people have changed a tremendous amount too. There's a huge interest among golf people of being more environmentally friendly. So I think that's a big change too. You know, they're under pressure to have good turf grass because that's what they need to have. But there's a lot of folks that want to do alternatives. So I think the message is getting out there. I would like it to happen faster, but it is changing. So I take heart in that, I guess.
I don't know if this is alternative or not, but my lawn, I basically mow the weeds. It's one of those things where I don't think I've ever put fertilizer on my lawn and I don't think I've ever put herbicides. So is there anything wrong with that? I mean, it looks like grass, it's not beautiful, but I know there's a lot of kind of what you would call weeds, clover certainly, that's pollen and nectar for the bees, and there's plantains. Is there anything wrong with my just doing kind of nothing?
No. If you came to my lawn, I would call it a weed test laboratory because I have every weed known to man. I'm a big fan of clover because I'm a beekeeper. I think those lawns are fine. If that's, you know, what you want, to me, that's okay. The only caveats I would say with something like that would be if you have a lot of crabgrass and then that crabgrass dies in the fall and you have bare ground over the winter, that's a source of erosion and nutrient runoff. So we like to see really dense lawns because dense lawns hold the nutrients, they slow down the water. So areas that sort of go bare with crabgrass or annual weeds, I'm not really thinking that's helping the environment. I would rather see dense growth there. So that, you know, is actually probably more environmentally friendly. So sometimes doing a little bit like fertilizing your lawn and having it denser may actually be better than having a lawn that really is causing you know, or allowing nutrients to run off. So, but I think, you know, there shouldn't be any pressure involved. I always run across people that live in upscale housing and there's this pressure to have a beautiful lawn or to try to achieve that. And I don't like social pressure. I don't think people should do that to each other. So I don't subscribe to the social aspects of lawn care.
So we noticed that there's a push to plant more naturalized landscapes and alternatives to green grass lawns. Could you tell us a little bit about some IPM practices people could use instead?
Well, as far as if you want to have a lawn and you want to take care of it, I would say, you know, do a soil test, learn what your nutrient levels are. If you need phosphorus, you might need to add it, but you probably don't need to add phosphorus. But the soil test tells you a lot of interesting information for any kind of gardening. So I'm a huge fan of soil tests. So contact your county cooperative extension office and they can help you with that. That's kind of step one. The overseeding, which is something we've worked on a lot, is just using grass seed, especially perennial ryegrass or tall fescue, and putting that down in the fall several times. And that will increase the density of the lawn. That will cover up the bare spots. And then the next year, you're going to have more grass. And it also works to crowd out the crabgrass. Crabgrass is probably the number one weed that is in New York State lawns, and people put on pre-emergent herbicide in the spring. So we would like to get them to use grass seed in the fall, build up the density of the lawn. Then you don't need to use the pre-emergent herbicide. And that's something that Cornell people, Iowa State, and me, we've been kind of the three people that have been pushing that. And that's actually starting to get out in the mainstream. So I think that's really exciting. That's my top tip, really, for IPM sort of a lawn. And then, you know, if you have grubs, we have some alternative methods for controlling those. Chinch bugs are a problem that come along. We have grasses that are chinch bug resistant. So, you know, if you have a really bad chinch bug problem, maybe you need to use an insecticide, but then don't plant the same old grass. Try to find the chinch bug resistant grasses, use the genetics, and then you'll probably have less chinch bugs in the future. So there's a lot of little tricks like that. Now, that, of course, that's not marketed out there and that's not sold easily in the store, but we can help people with those sorts of things.
On Tuesday, May 14th, the New York for All Coalition held a rally at the Capitol to call for passage of the New York for All Act. All New Yorkers, regardless of immigration status, want to lead open lives without intimidation. We hear from several speakers, starting with Robert Aguimain, who is the Vice President of Advocacy for the New York Immigration Coalition, who also served as moderator.
My name is Robert Aguimain, and I am the Vice President of Advocacy for the New York Immigration Coalition. We are here today to urge the state legislature to pass the New York for All Act. This act would protect immigrant New Yorkers from prohibiting local law and state agencies from colluding with federal immigration services. As attacks across the country increase on immigrants and immigrant communities, stripping them of their sense of security and belonging, instilling fear and uncertainty, undermining their basic human rights, New York has to take action, and it has to take action now. All New Yorkers, one more time, all New Yorkers, regardless of their immigration status, deserve to feel safe in their community. Unfortunately, too many live in constant fear and anxiety, impacting their ability to complete their daily tasks and live their everyday lives. Whether it's driving, walking to the grocery store, seeking medical care at the emergency, at the ER, all these different things that are necessary for us to live, they're impacted because they live in this constant fear. Shame. It is an absolute shame. This fear comes from the fear of being deported or incarcerated for something that is unfortunate of within this country of just being an immigrant. It impacts our ability to fully engage in our communities with our community centers, with our neighbors, with our loved ones. It impacts every aspect of our life, and it doesn't have to be this way. No family should have to have the fear of the possibility of their loved one being removed from their family nucleus and never being able to come back. It is absolutely horrific. Every New Yorker, regardless of immigration status, needs to be able to live their lives within their communities without fear. New York for All would put an end to the inhumane policy that has scapegoated and targeted immigrant New Yorkers for decades. And by doing so, this bill improves public safety for all New Yorkers. We are calling on the state legislature and Governor Hochul to pass the New York for All Act this year.
My name is Cassandra, and I'll be interpreting Marcos's statement. Hello, my name is Marcos Martinez, and I'm here representing agricultural workers and supporting the New York for All campaign. I, along with many members of Alianza Agricola, work in dairy farms and ensure that New York can continue to be a state that brings prosperity to the agricultural industry. The immigrant community does a lot for the state of New York, and it is time for New York to offer us protections. We should no longer be in a position where we can be threatened at work, at stores, in medical centers, or in other support offices by calling the police. Many of my colleagues and I have seen or been victims of this collusion. And for that reason, many families have been separated. We know and have seen that calling the police is the same as calling immigration. We no longer want any collusion between immigration and local police. We believe that all immigrant workers in all sectors, agriculture, restaurants, construction, and many more, should feel safe. We are here because we come to work to contribute to this country and support our families. I believe it is time to recognize our efforts and rights. It's time to pass New York for All.
Hello, everyone. I'm Rebecca Lamort, here today on behalf of 10,000 hardworking union members at Laborers Local 79, because right now we need New York for All. Our union was founded by immigrants over 100 years ago, so this is personal to us. No one should move about their community in fear. No one should pick their child up from school in fear. No one should go to the doctor in fear. No one should go to work and come home in fear. Laborers Union is proud to stand shoulder to shoulder with our allies here today in the Capitol, urging the New York State Legislature to pass New York for All and give